This is In the Loop. I'm Lisa Labas in for Sasha Ann Simons. Before we hear more about the biggest local stories of the day, we'll turn to a case heard by the U.S. Supreme Court that was spearheaded by a family-owned toy company from suburban Chicago. The case challenged the legality of President Trump's broad use of tariffs. And court watchers say a majority of justices appear to be ready to side with plaintiffs and not the administration. At the table, John Marshall Law School professor Steve Schwinn, tariffs expert Cecile Shea. They discussed yesterday's arguments and what all this could mean for businesses and consumers. We also invited Rick Woldenberg, CEO of toy company Learning Resources, to join us. He and his family were still in Washington, D.C. after yesterday's hearing, so he couldn't join us live, but we'll be hearing some clips from him throughout our conversation. Cecile started off by talking about what's at the heart of this case. Here's Cecile.
Well, I think the first thing we have to acknowledge is that this particular case was over one set of tariffs that are under one particular law, and it's an alphabet soup referred to as IEEPA, but I just refer to it as the Emergency Powers Act.
Okay.
And this is not a law that has been used on tariffs. It is a law that has been used to sanction countries, to ban imports from countries with which we have a serious security issue. It's never been used for tariffs. And as Justice Coney Barrett pointed out, you know, it's hard to call France and Spain a security threat. And some of the tariffs under this law do affect a lot of our closest allies. But I do think we need to acknowledge that a lot of the tariffs that people are feeling at the grocery store and at Home Depot and other places are under other sections of the law. So one of the questions is how broad will this decision be? Could it be a decision that would affect all the other tariffs? So that's point one.
Okay.
But obviously, these tariffs do affect a lot of things that people purchase every day that businesses need to continue. As an example, Brazilian beef, right? That's something that a lot of people are going to care about. So in short, the question is whether the very specific question, and I'm not the lawyer at the table here, so we'll ask the expert on that. But the very specific question is, can the president place tariffs like this under IEEPA? The broader question is, should the president have so much authority to place tariffs without any kind of consent from Congress? And so that second issue was touched on briefly yesterday, but yesterday the most of the debate was on the IEEPA tariff specifically.
Right. Steve, I want to ask you, how does the administration argue these tariffs are legal? From my understanding, it comes down to the notion that the president has purview, they say, because, as Cecile just said, it's being used for national security and foreign policy, and it's not a tax.
Well, that's exactly right, Lisa. And as Cecile said, so the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the IEEPA, gives the president the power to regulate importation and exportation. The administration is really hanging its hat on this word to regulate.
Okay.
And the idea is that these tariffs are a regulatory effort, and they're very careful to say, in their view, they're not taxing. Their primary purpose is not revenue generating, but rather to regulate, and to regulate for a variety of different purposes. One purpose is to restore a kind of balance of trade. They see that the tariffs can offset a trade deficit with many of these countries, at least according to the administration. The other reason that they're using them is as leverage for other foreign policy objectives. And we've heard this from the White House, where they're using tariffs in order to negotiate, for example, peace treaties. And so the administration's theory is we're using these tariffs to regulate, not to tax, for these different purposes.
But, I mean, there's in IEEPA, it says the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. The word emergency is in there. These don't sound like emergencies to me.
These are not emergencies. You know, this has never been used to tax or tariff before. We've had balance of trade deficits for many years and decades. Nothing here is unusual or an emergency or would trigger IEEPA in that regard. But here's the thing, Lisa. the courts probably aren't going to assess the administration's determination that this was an emergency or an unusual circumstance. They probably won't touch that. And the reason why is because courts tend to be very deferential to the president in determining things like national security or a national emergency. So really, I think what we're looking at here is that verb to regulate. Does to regulate encompass tariffs or not?
Okay. Either Cecile or Steve, have past presidents used this IEEPA Act the way President Trump is using it?
No, it's rarely used at all.
Okay.
And we should say there's a difference between sanctions and tariffs. Mm-hmm. And I know I slip up sometime and use one word and not the other, but there's a difference. A sanction is a specific trade action, usually some sort of embargo or a slowdown in the import of a product, in order to bring about a specific political aim, right? It's in order to punish Russia for invading Ukraine, or it's in order to pressure China on a human rights initiative. And that's a sanction. That is very different from a tariff, which is a tax. Now, interestingly, mm-hmm. as Steve just said, the president says these aren't taxes. Or the president, or I guess the Solicitor General specifically yesterday tried to argue that these are not taxes. But 2 hours later, the president said how he's raised billions of dollars from all of these tariffs.
Sure.
So, these are taxes. I mean, as I recall, even the Constitution would refer to these as taxes. And really, I think, and Steve can correct me if I'm wrong, the decision is going to come down to whether it's Congress's responsibility to tax people and to therefore regulate tariffs, or whether the president really does have carte blanche to do these things under some of these specific laws.
Okay. And we'll get to the consequences of that if the president does have, this broad authority then. But we did talk about the CEO of Vernon Hills toy company, Learning Resources, Rick Waldenberg. He's the guy who sued over this in April. And now this case being decided by the high court. We want to play this clip of him talking about this case. This is from the Amicus podcast with Dahlia Lithwick.
I think from the beginning, I felt that politics created this problem and politics will resolve it. And so I wanted to have a communication strategy so that people could understand the devastating impact of this tax increase that was unlawful. And one way to enhance the communication strategy was to also litigate. So I would say that the intent was to alert the voters as to what's going on about an economic threat that comes with this administration, this law, and at the same time challenge its legality and use all of that to shift political winds to make it more difficult for them to pursue this hidden tax increase. They want to increase our taxes. There's a way to do that. Pass a law.
All right, Steve, what do you have to say about what Rick had to say there?
Well, I think he's spot on. What's going on with the invocation of the IEEPA is that the Trump administration seems to be trying to conceal its effort to tax, and it is a tax, to tax companies without really saying that they're taxing companies. They want to pretend that this is a tariff, pretend that this is a regulatory effort, but it is a tax. And what Rick is saying, legally speaking, is that if the president is going to do that, the president needs specific authority to tax from Congress. The IEEPA does not give the president that specific taxation authority.
Cecile, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And as I said earlier, one of the things that interested me, kind of a legal layperson yesterday, was whether some of the judges would bring up some of these broader issues, which is the amount of authority that Congress has ceded to the executive over the last 60 years on both tariff issues, but also on negotiating trade agreements, which under the Constitution should be the purview of the Congress. But, it makes it easier for Congress when they go home to get reelected to be able to say, well, I didn't vote for that tariff or I didn't vote for that free trade agreement. They didn't have to. So for Congress, it's another way to kind of escape responsibility, but also a way to escape having to educate their constituents on why some of these things are happening. So some of the justices, I'm sure, would look at this in private as a part of a bigger picture of Congress continually wanting the courts to do its job for it or wanting the president to do its job for it on things like immigration, right? You're going to be talking about immigration later. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason we're in this immigration mess is Congress has refused to pass immigration reform for the last 20 years and has just let the executive branch do whatever it wants. So this is part of a bigger issue. And how broad, to my mind, how broad the decision ends up being or how many dissents there are or what is written will kind of give us a little bit of a view into how the Supreme Court is looking at what Congress's role should be in a lot of these really major issues.
Okay. I think there's a separate case and challenge brought to the court. It was filed by 12 states, including Illinois. Can you tell me a little bit about that? I'm not as familiar.
With the tariffs, Lisa?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so there were a couple of claims that had worked their way through the courts with tariffs. One was brought by a group of states. Mm-hmm. Another was brought by a group of small businesses. They pursued separate tracks in the lower federal courts, but all the lower federal courts that ruled on this ruled the tariffs unlawful and said that President Trump exceeded his authority under IEEPA. So the wind really is behind the back of the plaintiffs in these cases, behind the small businesses in the one set of cases and behind the states in the other set.
All right. Okay. So the Supreme Court hearing oral arguments yesterday in this case, I want to play a little bit of some of what we heard from a few justices. We'll hear from Sonia Sotomayor, also Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Neil Gorsuch.
It's not an article. It's a congressional power, not a presidential power to tax. And you want to say tariffs are not taxes, but that's exactly what they are. They're generating money from American citizens, revenue.
The vehicle is imposition of taxes on Americans, and that has always been the core power of Congress. So to have the president's foreign affairs power trump that basic power for Congress seems to me to kind of at least neutralize between the two powers, the executive power and the legislative power.
Don't we have a serious retrieval problem here? Because once Congress delegates by a bare majority and the president signs it, and of course every president will sign a law that gives him more authority, Congress, as a practical matter, can't get this power back once it's handed it over to the president. So one-way ratchet toward the gradual but continual accretion of power in the executive branch and away from the people's elected representatives.
Okay, so I'm hearing a bit of a through line here. I've heard the word taxes a few times, and I'm hearing separation of powers. Your thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, wow, right? You can almost feel the separation of powers, tectonic plates shifting in these discussions. And as Cecile suggested, this really is all about the separation of powers. To what degree can Congress delegate authority to the president to do something that is not clearly within the statute that Congress delegated and nevertheless within the power of Congress? What the justices are saying here is everybody knows these are taxes. They don't really care what the administration is saying, that they're not taxes. They are taxes. And the taxation power is within the unique power of Congress, not the president. So if the president is going to impose taxes, the president needs clear authority from Congress to do that. Mm-hmm. If the court were to go with the president, says Justice Gorsuch, that just means that the court is aggrandizing the power of the presidency with no end in sight and really no check on that continual aggrandizement of the presidency.
Cecile, do you have thoughts on what the justices had to say?
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, as you could probably tell by my earlier comments, I agree with them, which doesn't happen too often with that particular assortment of judges. But, you know, the challenge is going to be that some of these tariff laws, not the one that's being discussed, have been around for over 60 years now. And so if some of them were to come under fire, either now or in a subsequent court case, which I imagine there probably will be on some of these other tariff authorities that the president has used, what would happen to the tariffs that have been in place now in some cases for decades mm-hmm. under those laws? And that is something that the Supreme Court justices always think about, which is how much havoc will our decision play with existing policies and other things. In this case, it wouldn't cause a lot of havoc, I don't think, because these tariffs have not been in place for even a year yet. So I think they could make this specific decision specifically on the IEEPA tariffs. But then what happens if Trump then turns around and puts the same tariffs back in place, but uses a Section 232 or a Section 301 to refer to the panoply of other laws he has available to him? We're still going to have the same tariffs. And I should just say, I suspect that's one of the reasons you see the stocks kind of in turmoil today, because no one really knows what comes after this Supreme Court decision. It's going to be very interesting to watch.
Right. And we don't know the timeline. I'm hearing some things like it might be sooner. We might hear this decision sooner rather than later. But you know, we'll definitely keep watching. So we did get a statement from Rick Woldenberg of Learning Resources. And in that statement, he said he was grateful the Supreme Court heard arguments on this landmark case and the issues raised are of paramount importance to our country. He also says the IEEPA tariffs are a multi-trillion dollar tax on Americans, burdening the thousands of small and medium-sized businesses, which make up the backbone of our economy, as three lower courts already have. We're hopeful the Supreme Court will uphold that IEEPA tariffs are illegal. Okay, so this decision in this case could have significant impacts. Crane's Chicago Business calling it one of the most economically important legal clashes in the country's history. Even the president had underscored how this case, he said, literally, this is life or death for our country. What do you think these impacts could look like?
So it is an important case. There's no question about that. It's important for a lot of different reasons, maybe most obviously the economic reasons. You know, in addition to the economic impacts, Lisa, that you quoted, I've also read different studies ranging from $1,200 to $2,400 per family per year under these tariffs. So this is something that's going to hit not only businesses and small businesses, but also consumers in their pocketbook and directly. This is a hugely important case for those reasons. But here's the thing. If the Supreme Court were to strike Trump's authority under IEEPA to impose these tariffs, there are other trade authorities that President Trump probably could rely on to achieve some or much of what he has achieved by imposing these tariffs under IEEPA. These are tariff statutes specifically where Congress has given the president authority, circumscribed authority to be sure, but nevertheless authority to issue tariffs in certain circumstances that could replace the tariffs that he's issued under IEEPA.
Okay, Cecile, I'm going to ask you briefly about that. We're going to last word to you. What could the president use?
So he can use at least three other trade authorities, and he has used them. And as I said at the beginning, most of the tariffs that he has placed have not been under IEEPA. So whether a lot of the tariffs that are in place would go away, some of the universal 15 and 25% tariffs, for instance, were under a different section of law. And so depending on how the Supreme Court writes its opinion, it theoretically could affect those, but I kind of don't think they're going to write their opinion that way. So unfortunately, you know, people are not going to see huge changes immediately at the market, except perhaps on some things like Brazilian beef. But they are going to see some improvement. But really, this is a story that's going to continue, and I hope continues quickly, because it is causing a lot of economic damage to small businesses and to people who are just trying to feed their families, frankly.
All right. I'm going to have to leave it there. That's Cecile Shea, who is a non-resident senior fellow on security and diplomacy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. And I've also been speaking with Steve Schwinn, a professor at the John Marshall Law School at UIC. Thank you so much for helping me figure this out.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Time to catch you up on the biggest stories of the day. At the table, WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and Chicago Sun-Times reporter Violet Miller. Yesterday, federal agents arrested a teacher at a daycare on Chicago's Northwest Side. Here's Violet with those details.
Yeah, so about 7 a.m. yesterday, video shared with the Sun-Times shows a woman getting out of the passenger side of a car and being chased by federal agents into this building, Rayito de Sol daycare. And so, you know, teachers there have told us that federal agents, armed federal agents, checked every room in the building looking for this woman, eventually dragging her out through the front doors. They have confirmed that she was a teacher at the daycare. And so other teachers tried to show these agents identification. She was yelling, "Yo tengo papeles," which means "I have papers" in Spanish, at the agents as she was being detained, but she was taken anyways. The Department of Homeland Security said agents targeted her vehicle specifically, and she was followed in on the way to work.
They said that they're telling a different story, that she was like getting away from them, or what did the federal agency?
They said that they had been attempting to pull her over and chased her into the lot where the daycare was and eventually into the building.
Okay.
And so they said they weren't specifically targeting the daycare, but that they were targeting her on her way to work.
Okay.
The daycare closed for the day. Last night, the community came together in response after this. We saw hundreds of people gather in North Center Town Square. A parent there from the school spoke and said that she had been trying to help the teacher, Miss Diana, with case to get her papers in order, and so that she had an active case. But there we saw at the rally, people were mobilizing. State Senator Mike Simmons actually calling for the abolition of ICE, calling on the Illinois congressional delegation to defund the agency, saying that you really just can't have a reformist mindset for an agency that is doing what it is doing.
Sure. And correct me if I'm wrong, I believe this is the first time an arrest in Chicago has happened on school grounds.
No, actually, just a few weeks ago, we saw a Northside school. We saw a vendor of CPS, a vendor employee detained on school grounds. Video showed it would look like a landscaper being taken, though we did not hear back from that gentleman's employer or CPS on that.
Okay. And Claire, I know we've got video of this arrest. It shows a bit of a struggle as the federal agents are removing this teacher from the daycare. And a judge this morning is expected to rule on how ICE and Border Patrol are using force. Do you have details on that?
Right. So last month, U.S. District Judge Sarah Ellis banned riot control weapons like tear gas without warnings. Also, she banned any force against people who pose no immediate threat, say, for example, someone getting out of their car, right? And those limits are set to expire this morning, which is why she's scheduled to rule on whether or not essentially to extend those limits and continue to clamp down on how and when agents are using force in their enforcement efforts. So in proceedings yesterday, Ellis heard witnesses describe, violent situations, having to stare down the barrel of a gun, for example, being threatened of being arrested just simply for pulling out their phone and recording video of federal officials. So there's also the question of pepper balls and tear gas, and Violet can speak to that. We've been seeing so much of that at Broadview, these canisters being deployed unnecessarily. But it's important to note, too, that Ellis heard testimony yesterday of Border Patrol Chief Gregory Bovino saying that he and his agents have faced violent mobs and calling their use, protesters' use of force exemplary. Okay. So more to come. This is supposed to come down at 10 a.m. this morning.
Okay, so in just about 50 minutes or so. And Violet, there's another court ruling yesterday. A federal judge ruled about what needs to happen to improve conditions at the Broadview ICE processing facility. What did we learn there?
Yeah, so we heard 3 hours of testimony from folks who had been held at Broadview. They described, at least 100 people in a single holding cell, a lack of food, water, bedding. And so now this 2-week temporary restraining order, which is to start going into effect tomorrow, the government has until noon tomorrow to report to the judge on some of these improvements. But some of the requirements were clean bedding mats with sufficient space to sleep, because previously, people who'd been held there testified they were forced to sleep on the ground near toilets. Access to soap, toilet paper, towels, menstrual products, shower at least every other day, as well as 3 full meals, water, and cells being cleaned twice a day. Detainees there will also now be required to be provided a private space that they can speak with their attorney, as well as any medications they are prescribed.
And did the judge talk about how we're going to make sure that these things are happening? Who's going to check?
Yeah, so actually the plaintiffs had asked for an inspection of the facility as part of their motion. That part was denied, so there won't be an inspection, say, at least not by the plaintiffs or by the means that they were requesting. But like I said, the judge is asking the government to check in and kind of provide evidence of these by tomorrow at noon, saying that, you know, he understood it couldn't go into effect immediately.
Chicago Public Schools, a step closer to choosing a new CEO. Talk about that process. Where are we?
Yeah, so Sarah Karp has been reporting on this for WBEZ and the Sun-Times. And according to multiple sources that she spoke with close to the search, the Board of Ed has narrowed it down to two finalists for the superintendent job. And the current interim CEO, this is Macklin King, is not one of them.
Oh.
So that's created some disappointment. The Westside NAACP got wind of this decision of her not being included in the final two. And they said they were very disappointed. This is Dwayne Truss told Sarah Karp yesterday that he's angry and upset. And he told Sarah it's disrespectful, calling it some serious politics. Okay. So board members not revealing the names just yet of the final two. A board member did tell WBEZ that the finalists will be interviewed on Monday, and a choice could be made for the next superintendent as soon as next Thursday.
Okay, so we could have someone next week then. All right. And it's day 37 of the longest federal government shutdown in history. The Trump administration says this is not a fun story. It's going to limit flights at 40 airports across the country. And we're all thinking about Thanksgiving travel ahead. What do we got?
Yeah, this is the big news. So the FAA has not named just yet which airports that it's calling these high volume airports.
I think
it might be safe to assume, but we're not going to do that. We're going to wait and see what the FAA has to say. But if we're running the math,
but we're kind of busy here,
right? We are busy, but the reduction stands to impact thousands of flights nationwide. So at O'Hare, that could be 121 of its roughly 1,200 flights currently scheduled for tomorrow. Okay. This is when this decision is supposed to take effect. United Airlines, Chicago-based United Airlines, a CEO saying that hub-to-hub flying for United is not going to be impacted by this. Also, they're offering refunds for anybody who feels like their flight, you know, they don't want to fly. So we'll see what the FAA has to say, but Thanksgiving travel could get dicey. Experts are advising to book your flights. Just go ahead and book them.
I did.
And try to book the earliest flight that you can.
Okay. All right. So let's stick with transportation, Violet. A judge has blocked the Trump administration from withholding transportation funding over immigration enforcement. Could this affect plans for the Red Line extension that has been in the works for years?
So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of federal funding involved with that project. And this, you know, might quell some fears that that funding was at risk. You know, this was the final ruling out of the district court. So, of course, it can be appealed to the appellate court. But for right now, this is the final ruling. The court said that the Trump administration, quote, blatantly overstepped its authority in trying to condition transit funding on, you know, assisting with immigration enforcement from different state, city, and county levels. And this is the second victory for, you know, Attorney General Kwame Raoul for Illinois, as well as a coalition of about 20 other attorneys general who, you know, also recently just last month won another victory when a judge ruled that the Trump administration couldn't condition disaster relief funds on sanctuary laws being, you know, repealed.
Sure, sure. Okay, Claire, what else are you watching?
So this is just a sound-rich story if you want to listen in our afternoon broadcast. But Southland College Prep, this is in the southwest suburbs of Chicago, had just their typical pep rally for homecoming yesterday. But during the celebration, the school announced that their band director, Ron Harrington, was named the 2025 Illinois Network of Charter Schools Teacher of the Year.
Teacher of the Year.
So big recognition. Woo. You had the marching band playing. People at the school are saying that he's family. He instills discipline and also respect.
Respect.
So teach your children well.
Yes. Excellent. Okay. Thanks, Claire. Violet, while I've got you here, you reported earlier this week on Illinois suing over changes to the Federal Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. That's where you work in public service, like you're a teacher or law enforcement, and then you get student loan relief. And here we are back with Kwame Raoul. Why is the Illinois Attorney General suing over this?
Yeah, so this is another coalition lawsuit, like I said, about 20 other attorneys general with Kwame Raoul. And just to quickly describe the program, so it takes public servants 10 years in the same position or 120 consecutive monthly payments to qualify for this loan relief. But the Trump administration is trying to change the rules for this service, saying that any employer that is, quote, engaging in substantial illegal purpose, you know, is going to be disqualified from this. Now, in their description, this can range from anything, you know, assisting with immigration, gender-affirming care, DEI programs, or even just engaging in public protest in some ways. And so the suit says that the Trump administration is trying to chill activity. No response at this time from the Department of Education, who implemented the rule just last week.
Right. I mean, that language is very squishy, you know.
Yeah. The definition that keeps coming up is arbitrary and capricious. This mm-hmm. is something that we've seen in you know, a few suits now, even some of the other ones that we've mentioned, because this seems to be kind of winning language for the attorneys general to use. But that is the definition that they are using for some of the conditions, just because they really aren't clear.
All right. That is Claire Lane and Violet Miller with the Sun-Times. For the latest on immigration enforcement and all the court cases we are keeping track of, you can head over to suntimes.com.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yasin, and edited by Ethan Schwab. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/intheloop. Thanks for listening.
Rise and shine. WBEZ is serving local stories for breakfast every weekday morning from 5 to 11. Tune in on the WBEZ app to hear what Chicago's talking about as you start your day.